a series looking at 10 different spiritual health markers. As indicated on our bulletin cover, your test results are in, and we're of course always looking for those. This week, we're talking about helping real people with real problems, what we might call justice and compassion ministries. And this is a big topic. The water gets real deep here. Gets deep for me anyway. This week, Dr. O'Neill helped me out with a couple of resources that I had not been had my hands on before, and so I've read these this week. It's very good. Timothy Keller has a book called Generous Justice. I recommend it to you. He really covers all the angles that we come at this topic with. And then there's a group called the International Justice Mission. And there's a workbook called The God of Justice. And I'll be looking at a couple of things in that. And we'll get to defining this. In this book here, there is a picture in here of a little girl who is smiling at the camera, and she still has her baby teeth. She's not very old. She's probably maybe 6 or 7. And she lives in India. She's holding up a little piece of paper, just a scratch pad piece of paper torn out from a tablet, and it's got a little stick figure on it. And it says in the caption that this is the first thing this little girl has ever drawn in her life. Because she has spent all of her life before this in a rock quarry, probably with her parents and siblings, putting rocks into buckets. And so she has been freed from that slavery by these people. And that's probably the best of the stories as far as there's a lot worse things that happen to people, and that's a really bad one. And so there are just ugly things in this world. Right now, it's late in the evening in Mumbai, India, and I woke up this morning thinking that there's probably, or asking myself the question, how many children are there beginning another night, another nightmare, if you will, of being raped for money, and to which they're in this never-ending nightmare. Stuff like that happens close by here, even very close by here. So this topic is where the water gets real deep. And I am tempted, and I haven't decided yet, but I may take a break in our series and just look at some of these issues a little more clearly. But I wanted to stop today and just look at this. This, I think, of all the 10 things that these health parameters, I think this is something that we're engaged with, but I think it might also be a place for serious development for us as a congregation, how we get to and work on some of these problems in the world. So how can we be effective as God's people? That's really the question. How can we be focused and effective without being overwhelmed? You know, how do you swim in the sea of humanity's sorrow without drowning in it? That's the question. It's not easy. And we are called as believers to not hide in our houses, behind our privacy fences, behind our shaded windows, in front of our giant TVs, and block it out. Our Lord wants us out there. But there are so many problems, and they are big problems, and they are ugly ones in this world to solve. How do we solve those problems? And so this gets real philosophical real quick. A lot of people who don't believe in God at all say, you know, there's so much evil in the world, how could God let this go on? Why isn't God helping the poor? Well, the quick answer to that is, He is helping the poor. It's just the way he goes about doing it. You know how he's helping the poor? The downtrodden in this life? He's doing it through his people. Ah, that would be us. Ooh, there's a lot of us and there's a lot of problems out there. It's not a new issue. In fact, the Bible is full of challenges for us. God, who has given us everything, including his own son, is trying to get us to do the same thing for others. And it is a hard slog for him. It's a hard lesson for him to teach us. And God meets us everywhere our immature and sometimes devious human nature wants to go the wrong way and sew this thing up so that we can just not think about it. God meets us there. Say, nope, you can't go there. You have to get back on the road. He's trying to get us to do this. If we ignore the poor, we say, well, there's welfare, I pay my taxes. You know, didn't Scrooge say that? Are there not workhouses? Jesus was very tough on religion that was practiced carefully but without the benefit of deeds. Matthew 23 and verse 23. Woe to you, religious hypocrites, he says. You give a tenth of your spices, your mint, your dill, your cumin. You go out in your garden and you take a tenth of this and a tenth of that and a tenth of that, and you do it all very carefully, he says. But you have neglected the more important matters of the law, the weightier issues of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced justice, mercy, and faithfulness without neglecting your spiritual practices. So which of those do we do? Our spiritual practices or justice, mercy, and faithfulness? He says, both. I want you to do them all. We get very angry about injustice in this world. I can't just keep reading these stories because you just spiral down. It's very sad. And yet we can't ignore it either. We get angry about injustice, and sometimes our impulse is to make ourselves a martyr for all to see. I'll go out and I'll give my whole life and I'll do this, and everyone will see how angry I am about what's going on in the world. And many people have abandoned the gospel in the process of doing that. They go out into the world and they see how terrible things are, and they just get so disillusioned. Where has God been with all this stuff? Why is this happening? I mean, we have technology now. We have all kinds of wealth. Why isn't it better? And so many have let the gospel go in the process. But God meets us again, face to face, when we go down that road. He meets us again in our self-righteous indignation. He's not impressed with it. The scripture says in 1 Corinthians 13, this is Paul, if I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship in order that I may boast, so that everyone will look at me and see how hard I'm trying to fix all these problems, if I do that, but I do not have love, I gain what? Nothing. Nope. God's fended us off here. How do we thread this needle? Jesus was at the village of Bethany in the home of Simon the leper. Matthew relates this story to us in his gospel, chapter 26. And while he was there, a woman came to him, and she had this little alabaster jar, and it had in it very expensive perfume, and she poured it on Jesus' head as he was reclining at the table. It says that when the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste? They said. The perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. You're wasting God's resources. Stewardship. How many of us have thought that or said that? Yeah. It goes on. Aware of this conversation going on quietly over in the corner, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing for me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. He goes on, when she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. He was going to die soon. And truly I tell you this, wherever this gospel is preached around the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Now please note here that Jesus, part of Jesus' ministry was collecting up funds to give to the poor. They were doing that. But Jesus also tells us that God ultimately owns everything and he's in control of everything. When he says to us, the poor will always be with you, he's not excusing us from paying attention to them. He's saying that you can't do this by yourself and you're not going to get it done by yourself just by being a hero. You need to follow me. And he says, so you pay attention to what's in your world around you. And what's in their world around them right now is the Son of God. God himself in a body is with them. And that's something worth paying attention to. So she paid attention to it. And he said, don't give her a hard time for your theoretical, we could have done this or we could have done that. She's paying attention to the world she lives in right now. And so this comes back to our world. Think about your 8 to 15 people. Who in that group needs something? Who is being treated unjustly in this world? Is there something you can help with in this? Well, the Bible just adds to our frustrations. It cuts right down through the middle of our political parties. What is up with that? You know, if you're on the liberal persuasion, you emphasize the responsibility of the community to the individual. How can you keep all that money in the treasury when there are needy people? You say. And from the other side of the aisle, conservative thought emphasizes the responsibility of the individual. If there's no economy, then there's no jobs. Bible says, yeah, you're both right, and you're both wrong. It cuts right through the middle of it. The law of Moses has a reputation for being harsh and unbending. It's nothing of the sort. It was a big welfare program, is really what it was. It was about taking care of the community. It had in it features of regular forgiving of debts every 7 years, and every seven times 7 years, debts were forgiven. Because God recognizes in the law the fact that there are always bad situations. Stuff just happens that you can't help. There's crop failures. There's just all manner of things in this life. And it puts people in a bad spot. And then it recognizes the fact that not everyone is very clever with economics. It's just always going to be that way. But the law says, don't let them forever be downtrodden. Give them a break. Don't hold their head underwater. Don't take their ancestral property out of their family forever. Every 50 years or 49 years, you give it back. You made your money off of it. It tells landowners, leave the edges of your field unharvested. Because it really doesn't belong to you. It belongs to God, and he wants to provide jobs for people that are down on in their luck. They got a bad situation. They were born into a bad situation. They're not so clever. They need to be able to work and make their own bread. So give them a way to do that. There are many provisions of the law governing and demanding that we care for poor people and for immigrants. Immigrants. It says specifically about immigrants because God says you were foreigners. You were immigrants in Egypt. So don't forget that. You take care of the immigrants in your midst. Now this is getting all kind of political here. That's what we're commanded to do, whether you're on one side of the political aisle or the other. You help people. And that's just from the law of Moses. We're not even to the Gospels yet. There are also many provisions in the law that protect the property of entrepreneurs and business owners. You don't just take somebody's stuff and give it to someone else. Oh my goodness. What do we do with that? So we try to think about compassion and justice. Where do we start? Our instinct says, well, I want to be careful with God's money. But God says in the parable of the talents, take my money out and put it at risk. Take a risk with it. Invest it. Do something with it. We have this mentality about not-for-profit organizations. I heard a good YouTube on that this week from the TEDS conference. Guy gave a good example. He said that most of us, many of us, when we look at charities, we look at two of them and we say, well, who's got the lowest overhead? That's who I'm going with. I've done that many times. So it says here that these guys over here are only spending 10% of what's contributed on overhead. And so I feel good about that. I'm being responsible with God's money, right? But it's a bake sale. And they're going to make $71 out of that bake sale. And so they're only going to use, you know, $7 for the overhead. These other guys, they're going to use 40% of the overhead. 40%? Yeah, they're going to advertise. They're going to hire people that are really smart in advertising and doing all kinds of things. And they're going to make $71 million. So 60% of that is going to go out. You see? There's more to the question than just what's the overhead. What's the effect? The effect of the bake sale is I feel good about being careful with God's money, and I did make a contribution. Neener, neener, neener. The effect over here might be that I'm actually getting a lot closer to dealing with the real problem, maybe even on a global scale than I was over here. It's not easy. Small thinking keeps our ministry efforts down to just solving our guilt instead of solving the problems. But then when we get into, I mean, it's not easy, this. Human nature is still always a big factor here. Self-interest dominates. So we get into these world-scale relief programs that go in and just are able to affect what goes on in an entire country in Africa, say. But if you're a dictator, or if you're a rebel leader in Africa, and you've got a gang of guys that you want to take over the country with, what's the best way to get Western money into your country and into your hands? Create a group of starving people. So let's go destroy some crops and burn some villages down so we got groups of people walking down the road trying to find a place to live and survive. And here come the Western TV cameras. And here comes the Western aid. Sacks of grain and sacks of rice and all kind of good stuff. And so since we've paid off the police and we've paid off these guys and these guys, guess who's going to get all that stuff? I'm going to get all that stuff for me and my soldiers. See, it's complicated. Can we allow our